need an added incentive to get fit this year? Well, how about being able to do more in your garden? Hi, I'm Jill Nadeau in for Larry Mueller on Garden Talk today. Glad to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Susan Carpenter is back. She's the Senior Outreach Specialist in the Wisconsin Native Plant Garden at the UW-Madison Arboretum, and she's a fitness person, so we'll talk to her about that. And also in the studio is Jude Sullivan. He is a Senior Exercise Physiologist at the UW Health Fitness Center, and we'll be talking about what you can do to get ready for the gardening season, and we'll also take your native gardening questions and catch up on what's going on at the Arboretum. So give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Hi, Susan. Hi, Jude.
Hi.
Good to see you back again. Now, we've all got these resolutions that we have to help people with, right? So, Susan, why don't you tell us a little bit about, I mean, what you do at the Arboretum, but also that you're a fitness instructor.
Okay. Well, at the Arboretum, I'm the native plant gardener, so that's pretty obvious how I am interested in gardening. We work with native plants, and we have a garden right around the visitor center, which represents the native plant communities of southern Wisconsin. So we grow trees, shrubs, herbaceous plants, and we care for them. I work with students and volunteers to care for the garden during the growing season. During the off season, we do more indoor work and more computer work and are not quite as active physically.
I wonder why.
Which is why I ended up some years ago now getting involved with fitness and preparing, first of all, just to be more fit for the garden season as it starts, you know, just personally, but then being able to teach strength training, women's strength training at the UW Health Sports Medicine Center, Fitness Center, and working with Jude Sullivan, who has taught me a lot about teaching teaching strength training.
Sure.
And just generally how to teach with a more physical activity like fitness is. Mm-hmm. So we have quite an active class there. It's always full, and lots of people find it really valuable, not just for gardening, although I do have a lot of gardeners that I've worked with, but also for different activities, outdoor activities like kayaking or canoeing or camping or just you name it. Lots of things that people find that strength training to be helpful for. And of course, we have a huge range of classes, and Jude can probably tell more about the range of classes over
there. Jude, tell us a little bit about the fitness center itself.
Sure. So we represent the UW Hospital and Clinics, and we have a satellite clinic in the Research Park over by Westgate Mall. And so the fitness center is open to the public. So there's some confusion sometimes that people think there's a requirement in terms of affiliation with the UW or the hospital or whatever, but we operate just as a standard health club. So anybody can join. But we do have a medical model. So we have a little bit more care that we take with people who come to us, and we want to make sure that, you know, whatever they're aspiring to, that we start them out appropriately. And we have a ton of wonderful instructors like Susan, who really their willingness to teach is more of a avocation rather than a vocation, but they're just so passionate about health and wellness and fitness that it's a hand-in-glove fit for them to want to do that. Susan's a classic example. She came to us as a participant, and now because of her interest and what she realized was these incredible benefits she was getting, she wanted to flip the coin, and she wanted to be the one delivering the message. And so for her, it makes total sense, you know, given what she does in her field and how it benefited her. And she has so many people who were asking her questions, and they practically asked for her to be the instructor of the class. So,
well, some people are just born to teach, you know?
That's right.
So, Susan, what did it do for you? What were the benefits?
Well, really, for the benefits of taking a class that's really like a class that's only 2 hours a week, really, for strength training, it provides a really huge benefit in terms of what you can do to stabilize your body as you're moving through space. It helps with balance. It helps with just strength, helps with endurance, so stamina throughout the day. And it just helps in everyday life. So prior to being aware of some of the things that we'll be covering in our workshop that we'll be teaching at the fitness center in a couple of weeks, I would have not really thought about maybe in a gardening move, I want my body to be positioned in this way. I want to feel these muscles before I reach down and pick up that heavier thing and turn or rotate. I want to have confidence that that I have strength in parts of my body that I'm going to be demanding, you know, in a twisting motion or a lifting motion. A lot of the things that we do, a repetitive motion, just ways to keep the body working well. And if it's stronger, it's going to work well. And people find also just, you know, parenthetically, they find benefits with toning. They find benefits with throwing their suitcase up into the overhead bin and things like that, too. I hear a lot of different benefits that are not really, you wouldn't directly maybe relate to the class that you've been taking.
Do you think sometimes we don't realize how weak we've become until we have to do something like that? And then we all of a sudden we're strong, like, oh my gosh, I couldn't do that before. That's crazy.
I think that realization of how you can move from anywhere where you're starting to somewhere else and having kind of a guide and a path to get there. And that path might be a program that you could have put together, you know, maybe with help from someone, maybe overcoming something that physical therapy could, you know, help you with. We are not physical therapists, but we are exercise professionals. So we do refer people if they have something that should really be addressed with physical therapy, we refer them. And then they bring those exercises to class. Mm-hmm. They substitute those for the ones that they shouldn't be doing until they've resolved that issue, and then they're on their way again.
Well, let's talk about that workshop that you guys will be doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jude and I are going to be leading a workshop on Saturday, January 25th. So it's early in the morning from 8 to 10. You'll have a lot of your day left to enjoy. But at 8 to 10 at the Research Park Clinic, which is over on Science Drive, we will have a workshop. It will be we have some aspects of presentation and a lot of aspects of movement. So we will be, you know, people should come ready to move, comfortable clothing and ready to go. And we'll just move through different exercises, different movements, talk about different principles, but also feel those principles. And between the two of us, the group will be limited to some extent in size so that we can work with everyone and resolve any questions that individuals might have. Because exercise can be a very individual issue, you know, it can be very individual as well. Someone might find exercise very simple. Someone else might find it more challenging and other way around. So we like to work with people on an individualized basis, and we do
that. And Jude, how important is it for somebody to have a professional at least help them out in the beginning of an exercise program?
So there's a balance that we try to strike. As Susan mentioned, and you kind of alluded to in your question, you know, sometimes life can throw you a curveball and you're not ready for it. And it just brings an awareness to, hey, how did I get here? And the nice thing about it is that many times it's a reversible process. And so what we can do is with people who become out of touch with their physical well-being is we can help them reengage with that. And so we want people to trust themselves. And so I think what we do is we provide a platform for them to be able to explore, as Susan said, from a movement perspective. You mentioned posture earlier in the segment, too. We don't want exercise to be something that's an outside-in experience, but we'd rather have it be an inside-out experience. And so many of us in our lives, we just don't live that way. And so it takes time, you know, to get someone to kind of think that way and then ultimately allow themselves the opportunity to actually move through this process that way, because many times with our physical being, we try to dissociate ourselves from what's happening, especially if we feel like we're not healthy enough or not fit enough or whatever, and you just don't want to face those things. And so, like I said, I think we, especially Susan, provides a really safe, comfortable forum for people to be able to reengage with their physical being.
Do you find that with people that come to your class that we're hesitant because I'm not, you know, they're like, I'm not in good shape, so I can't do an exercise program?
Well, the main thing is when people come to the class, they always have a goal. Mm-hmm. And their goal may just be, I want to be able to be stronger. That's a pretty general goal. Or I want to be able to lift my kayak onto the top of my car by myself. So there's different goals that people have, but sometimes you don't know what your goal is right at the beginning. And so we do start with a kind of gradual approach based on the person's experience, where they feel they are now, if they have any concerns or issues that they're working around. And then we just move through that. And again, individually, we can take an individual approach because my class is set up with people moving around. So someone who's advanced can move at their level. Someone who's just beginning can move at their level and learn the different exercises. And there's so many different movements and exercises to learn that you can't learn them all at once.
Sure.
So yeah. You kind of move through it gradually. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes people have a goal. They reach the goal that they thought they had, and they're like, maybe I can go a little bit further, or wow, wait, I'm already further than
I thought I was. It's kind of addictive.
It's really fun. And then, of course, the classes themselves, they're meeting the other people there,
social
and everyone
aspect.
Is so supportive mm-hmm. of everyone else, and the environment is so supportive, and we have other people that work at the fitness center. So they're always ready to assist. If a person's a member, they may come on a day when they're not having class, and they may get assistance from the other staff that are there. So it's a really supportive.
And for those people who are listening, they're not in the Madison area. Mm-hmm. Where would be a good spot for them to go to find more information in their area about classes similar to this?
Yeah, that's a great question.
Hospitals maybe, or?
Well, that is a great question. So ours is a unique model, mm-hmm. but I think it's one that's been copied quite a bit. So we are definitely proponents of knowing your health and having somebody professional on board to kind of support you through that. So if there is something laying in the weeds, no pun intended, from a health perspective that you might want to have evaluated first, we're definitely advocates of that.
Mm-hmm.
Then from that perspective, you can take it to a medical-based model fitness center. You could take it to a health club. You could take it to a quote-unquote personal trainer. And ultimately, I think, as Susan was suggesting with her class, no matter who you are, you have to be comfortable with the choice that you made. So I would say, as you're making your decision, don't make a long-term commitment to anything until you've had the opportunity to test something out, to try it, and to see if it really resonates with you. Oftentimes, people will just, especially with the resolution time that it is, they'll just respond to something that they saw, heard, or read, mm-hmm. and thinking, well, that's the way to go. But it's not the way to go for me.
Yeah. Well, that's very true.
But at least you can try it, and then you can determine based on experience that this really isn't for me. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes we say, oh, I can't do that, because we're not really giving ourselves credit.
Sure.
Another good suggestion might be if they, in their community, if they speak with other people who have had a positive experience with, starting a program or overcoming an issue that they, that they were facing, a physical issue that they were facing, mm-hmm. because that might be a place to start. You know,
right.
there's a class that maybe they could get into and try, or, so really talking amongst their friends or community or within their clinic or something like that. There's mm-hmm. probably, there are probably opportunities to reach out from
sure.
there.
Great suggestions. Mm-hmm. Well, we're talking about what you can do to get physically ready to garden this spring with Susan Carpenter of the UW-Madison Arboretum and Jude Sullivan of the UW Health Fitness Center. Our on-air producer today is Jane Rotunda, and Tyler Ditter is our technical director. Joining the conversation, we'd like to hear your thoughts on becoming fit. What do you do to make sure you don't get injured while you're gardening? Give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. This is Garden Talk on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau, and we're talking about getting fit for gardening. And of course, we'll also take your native gardening questions, so you can certainly call us about that. Susan, let's get back a little bit to what are some of the ways that people can basically hurt themselves when they're gardening? I mean, I know there's a lot, but what are the basic ones?
Right. Well, the things you really want to avoid in gardening, I'd say some of the moves would be the bend over, which is where kind of not thinking about it too much, just reach down, bend over at the waist and try to lift something up or move something. Another thing to avoid is twisting motions when you're not kind of set for that. So those would both probably lead to back problems,
yeah,
I guess.
And, that's a lot
you know,
back
if your
problems.
Back, if your back hurts, you're just not happy. So also there are injuries that can happen with balance, because if you've, you know, loads are held away from the body, of course, are felt heavier than loads close to the body. And if you're moving or twisting during that, that can, you know, putting it out, reaching something toward you or pushing something away, that can be an issue. So these are all these. So the flip side of those things is to be aware, as Jude mentioned before, of posture. And, you know, if you see a tree that's standing nice and tall and has a nice strong trunk, that's a tree that's probably going to be more stable and stronger than a tree that's kind of leaning off at an angle and reaching out over over the side. So thinking of that and thinking of how your back and keeping your core, your whole core from your shoulders to your hips engaged in these movements can be really, really helpful. Protect your back and protect your balance in a way too, because if you fall while you're gardening, then you can get injured completely unrelated to the muscles and bones. Mm-hmm. You could just fall on your wrist or something mm-hmm. like that. And speaking of wrists and hands, there are some good exercises to be doing with that, because some of our classic strengthening exercises aren't really addressing, you know, the hand, the fingers and the hands and stuff. So we'll cover some of those things that are really specifically kind of from the elbow down and really help with that. Also your ankles. You need to be really strong, too, because you're, you know, wear good supportive shoes or boots while you're gardening, and then have strong ankles so that you again, that'll help with balance.
Are you telling me my flip-flops are not good for gardening? I'm shocked.
Well, we're always wearing closed-toed shoes while we're gardening,
yes,
for sure.
I do. I'm just kidding. But let's just go to, and actually, before we go to the phones, a couple of people would like just a reminder of when the event is and how they can sign up for it.
Oh, okay. Our workshop, Fitness for Gardening, is on Saturday, January 25th. And it's from 8 to 10 a.m. at the Research Park Clinic. The cost is $25, and there's a link for it at the Research Park Sports Medicine Center website. So www.uwhealth.org/fitforgardening, and you can find it.
You can find it linked
within the class.
Yeah. And we also have the link on the program note for this show, which is WPR.org/Larry. So you can find it there, too. So you can go directly to there.
Great.
Okay. All right. So let's go to the first caller, and that's Kim in Rhinelander. Hi, Kim.
Hi. I'm just calling to you were saying where can people go that don't live in Madison. I was going to say I'm in Rhinelander, and our YMCA offers the Silver Sneakers program, and it works all parts of the body with different bands, with weights, with the chair stands, and it really goes through each part of your body and helps with balance and all that stuff. So there are other things out there if you don't live in the southern part of the state.
Sure, and yep. Kim, what's the age levels for that?
It's generally for older people, but I think if you're 50 or older, I think that would be the cutoff or something.
That's a great example of a program that's well well conceived. It's been so if you're running across a program like that, you already know that it has a good basis, and it would be a reliable source. And that's a great suggestion. Thanks, Kim.
Yeah, love Silver Sneakers.
Lots of YMCAs scattered everywhere, so, and YWCAs. So,
great. Well, thanks, Kim. Appreciate that. Next, we've got Kel. She's in Sugar Camp. Hi, Kel.
Hi. I just wanted to remind you that the northern third of Wisconsin gets all kinds of exercise in the winter, shoveling snow, twisting, turning, balancing weights, And just picking yourself across the ground when you've had a little moisture on top of the snow uses all these inner little balancing acts. It keeps you pretty fit. I mean, I'm 70, and that's what I do is I shovel snow.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. That is, we haven't had as much snow in the South as you have certainly this year. But that is a great suggestion. Of course, you did point out that there are some complicating factors like slippery conditions. But you're right. You know, probably all 600 plus muscles are getting involved with some of those shoveling motions. I think that being aware of your posture and being aware of your core and being aware of how your body can safely move with twisting and lifting heavy snow, and that is a super super important for this exercise program. But I think you're on to something there with the conditioning.
Can I just add one more thing? Sure. So I would like to applaud you as well, because I think what happens is people tend to associate advanced age with I don't have to do as much or I can't do as much, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And so I think what you've shown is that some of this, really a large majority of this, comes down to mindset. And what you ultimately find is as you do things, you actually start seeking more things to do. And so shoveling is very active. It's very demanding, but it's quote-unquote not exercise. So if we can find ways to move more, ultimately you create this positive synergy in your own life where you just become more active.
Mm-hmm. Right. Absolutely. Right. My 86-year-old mother still shovels her stuff.
That's awesome.
Stuff.
So,
she's just super active, and that is huge mindset. So,
That's great.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
We were earlier talking about different positioning and whatnot, but we all have to weed as gardeners. What is the best way to do it without to not injure yourself, not to hurt your back?
Well, I find with the many people that I work with in the garden, I work with about 50 to 70 community volunteers every season. We all kind of have our own way of doing it.
Okay.
And so some people feel very comfortable sitting down and weeding if they're doing small weeding. Other people feel more comfortable with a kneeling pad or a little kneeling bench. Others actually squat or do what in exercise class would be called a lunge to kind of, you know, you keep your knees aligned and your spine is straight and you're kind of doing a lunging motion. So it kind of depends on what the task is, but people do, I think being generally aware of what is healthy and what is, you know, not going to cause injury, is if you can use that knowledge of your own body to modify your activities, that's really a good way to do it. You know, of course, some weeds are pretty big. So I usually find if I've got something that I'm pulling out and it's like a small tree or something like that, I'm going to get the shovel and boost it out a little bit and then get it. And you can learn a lot about root systems that way. But, you know, so knowing when to use tools, when to use supports like the little kneeling benches or kneeling pads just to be easier on your knees.
Mm-hmm.
Some people just like to sit down and they're comfortable doing that. Other people wouldn't do that at all.
Yeah. Now, Jude, does that just come down to knowing your body?
If not knowing, learning about it. So I think the one thing that Susan is highlighting here is that we're not just talking about doing a list of exercises and then just kind of plastering that on the wall and say, go get them. Movement is infinitely diverse. And like Susan said, everybody has kind of their own solution. And so, again, back to what I said before, we want to honor what people think they should be doing and try to meet them where they're at with this. And so what Susan does a great job with her class and then ultimately what we'll show in this Fitness for Gardening program is understanding what your own movement requirements are for what it is that you want to do, you know, the nature of the gardening that you enjoy, and then where are the problems, you know, where are these obstacles, and then how do we try to figure out a solution together? So we're not, you know, we're experts, but we're not going to, you know, impose something on somebody that they're simply not ready for or they're scared to do or whatever. So we, again, it's kind of this little squishy gray area that we kind of help them through so that they can develop the confidence where they, like Susan said, they know it's like, wow, I just did that. I think I could try this now. Mm-hmm. And that gets that mindset going again.
Sure. So what have people been saying who've taken the classes similar to that? I mean, how has it impacted how they garden?
Well, usually if there's people in that are in the regular class, the sustained class, they are they're usually surprised with how they can garden for longer at a stretch than they could before. They're usually reporting that they can, like, say, move rocks or something large like that, or bags
of rocks are heavy,
mulch or something like that. But once they've learned how, you know, ways to do that safely, they can accomplish more of the things that they want to accomplish. And that's usually the way the reporting, you know, the reporting happens. But mm-hmm. could be like, hey, I raked leaves for 8 hours yesterday. I never would have done that before. I'm like, that's a lot of raking.
That's a lot of raking.
But if you can do it safely and that's your goal and you feel good and you're strong and you didn't have any injuries, then that is someone who's reached their goal.
Absolutely.
So that's important.
So let's get this kind of separated out now. So we've got the fitness center. And do you have to be a member in order to take your gardening class?
No, you do not.
Do you have to be a member to take your fitness classes?
No, the fitness classes are, if there's openings in the fitness classes, okay. anyone, either a person who's a member or a person who's not a member can take
okay,
the class.
Yep. Yeah, just so people don't get confused.
Yeah, we want to create some flexibility for people. So if they don't mm-hmm. want to have the whole enchilada, they don't have to buy the whole enchilada. And mm-hmm. so people can kind of discriminate, you know, where their needs are or what their wants are. And then, like I said, we try to just meet them where they're at.
Yeah, and what we're hoping with Fitness for Gardening, since this is just a two-hour workshop,
right. One time
is
deal.
People
mm-hmm.
Will go away from this workshop with a small program that would be something they could continue on with, but it would also perhaps give them an opportunity to think about, maybe I'd like to go into more depth too, either, you know, joining a Silver Sneakers right. or another opportunity for fitness, you know, over the long term, maybe some more of a guide or path mm-hmm. there. Or there's lots of classes that can give the same benefits. Conditioning classes, movement classes. I mean, strength training is not the only class that fits into this. So lots of classes that are available that could be joined at mm-hmm. at that point. And so that's really the goal.
Yeah, I found yoga actually really helps in the garden too.
Mm-hmm. So. Yep, yoga mm-hmm. and strengthening while stretching, those mm-hmm. kinds of exercises are very important. Yoga, of course, you know, it seems like a different exercise, but if it helps you reach your goal, then mm-hmm. it's awesome.
Well, just the flexibility alone mm-hmm. is helpful. So.
Flexibility is mm-hmm. very important.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, we do have a caller. We've got Chris and Adams. Hi, Chris. How you doing?
Good morning. I'm good, Jill. I did this thing that was planned. I bought a little house on half an acre, and the backyard is going to be all prairie by the time I'm done. But I'm doing more formal gardens in the front of the yard just to keep the neighbors at bay. And I live in the Central Sands, and we do not have grass here. We have mm-hmm. grassish. And so we also have nothing. We don't have any dirt. So planting things involves digging 8 inches of sand out of the ground, moving it someplace, dumping it, and then coming back, and it's a lot of work.
Oh, wow.
And then putting compost in. But I did this thing, and I planned it because I'm elderly disabled, and I'm on a serious budget. And I realized that the guy who had all the bulbs in town was not selling them. And so what I did is I went out and dug my holes. And then 2 weeks ago, I went down there and put on my puppy dog eyes, and I pleaded with him to sell me said bulbs for very cheap when it was really cold outside. And I went and bought 1,500 pounds of compost, and I dragged it all into my front room, which don't do this because
yes.
Wow.
But then for the past 2 weeks, I have been putting hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of spring flowering bulbs in the ground. And my next door neighbor came over and she said, you know, that's not going to work. I said, well, if it doesn't work, you can come over in spring and tell me so. But right this minute, I'm going to do this anyway. But the point is, because I have MS and I have fibromyalgia and I'm wobbly mm-hmm. and I have fallen badly and hurt myself badly a couple of times. And I have come to the realization that I need to learn stance, and I need to learn how to pace myself. And I do all of those things. And I did not fall down hauling the 1,500 pounds of compost in and out of my house. So Wow, it works.
That is just a great story. Thanks for sharing that. Well, I hope it does work.
I'm sure it
will. In spring.
You'll have, we want pictures, Chris.
Pictures.
Of all of your bulbs in bloom. and both of you were shaking your head, and we have to know what we can do, right? Yeah, don't overdo it. Now, we were talking earlier about strengthening. What about endurance? Does strength training help with endurance, or do we have to do something else with cardiovascular?
Well, with strength training, you know, I was mentioning that, like, the class that I teach is 2 hours a week, and we don't generally, so you want to work out nice and vigorously during those 2 hours, but it's Monday and Wednesday, so you leave a day in between, your kind of recovery day there. If you've done a hard workout one day, you don't want to keep doing that every day. On the other hand, your cardio every day. Mm. You can do that every day, maybe take one day off sometime in a month.
Yeah, I think it depends on how you want to qualify or even quantify what endurance means. Repetitive gardening is a different form of endurance than going for a 30-minute walk, for example. But the 30-minute walk can definitely contribute to your endurance in your gardening. Mm-hmm. So, again, it kind of gets back to this idea of specificity, of knowing what the demands are of what you're trying to do, and try to target the time that you have available to do this accordingly. So we're all kind of time compressed, and so we want to make sure that we get the most bang for our buck from a time perspective, and so that's why we get into being specific about what it is that you're doing. And then the last thing I would say is that what people think, well, I'm strong or I'm not. It's a black or white, either or thing. And so really strength lies on a continuum. So you can have this idea of absolute strength where you're lifting rocks or whatever, or you're doing a lot of repetitive things over the course of a long day that still requires strength, but you need to repeat that strength threshold for a very long time. And so those are very different demands in and of themselves. So that's where Susan can help somebody program so that it can meet the demands of what it is that they're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm. Well, and let's kind of, you know, you work at the Arboretum as well as being a fitness instructor. This is Garden Talk, and we're getting fit for garden, which makes sense. But let's talk a little bit about what's going on over at the Arboretum, too.
Yeah, well, it's winter at the Arboretum. But
really?
it is, although it's an unusual winter.
It is.
We have some wonderful events coming up. We have our lecture series, our winter enrichment lecture series, which is very popular. We still have some slots left in that.
What kind of topics will you be discussing?
The topics for that are pretty varied. We have the first one will be next Thursday morning. These are offered Thursday mornings. And the first one will be about our Arboretum Bluebird Trail, which is a longtime project. One of our naturalists has been monitoring, and recording all the data for this Bluebird Trail for 31 years. So we have a lot of information about that, a lot we've learned, and that'll be the first talk. Then there's a series of other talks. We have topics like citizen science, which is very important now. The Tallgrass Prairie, we have a person coming in to talk about that. She's an author and an instructor about prairies. We have our Arboretum Research Symposium, which is like we bring together all the students who've been doing research, and they present on their research and posters and talks and really get to learn about what's going on there. We have a Gardening for Hummingbird presentation coming up, which is really exciting. And invasive jumping worms is another topic that gardeners would probably be interested in. So we'll have an update on that, a lot of the research that's going on with that, a lot of what we've learned from our studies and from others, colleagues that have been studying that and that our researchers have been in touch with throughout the country. So those are some of the examples. We have also a large panel about stormwater. And stormwater is something that gardeners are pretty interested in because obviously, we're having heavier rains, and that has an impact on our own areas. We're putting in rain gardens and on larger scales, cities putting in rain gardens and so forth, larger detention areas and so forth to deal with some of these effects of climate change. So those are some of the topics that we've got, but there's 10 lectures, 10 weeks of it. So I really encourage people to go to the Arboretum website. It's arboretum.wisc.edu, and you can see which lectures you might want to go to or choose them all.
Way. There you go. And, of course, the spring plant sale is coming up,
the
too.
The spring plant sale is coming up. So that has two parts. We have the big tent sale in May on May 9th. That's on a Saturday. Lots of fun just to get in the tent and start selecting your plants. But we also have, the Friends of the Arboretum also has an advance order, and that's open now. So an advance order is where you could order trees, shrubs, ground covers. You can order individual plant species, like say if you wanted a whole flat of a certain kind of native grass, or if you want to have mixes like pollinator mix, rain garden mix, etc. So for different habitats, we have those available. And those are plants that you can order now, select what you want, just exactly what you want for your situation, and you put that order in before Valentine's Day, February 14th is the deadline. And then those plants are ready for pickup in May, on May 7th. And you just come over to the Arboretum, pick up your plants and head on home. And hopefully you've got your shovels ready and you're ready to
There's
plant.
No snow on the ground. And,
exactly. So that's going on. And again, that's available from our website as well. It's linked there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So then the other, and 2 days later, you've got the tent sale, like you said, where you just take your chances.
Where you can just come in. Well, if you get there early, there's a lot of plants to select from.
Yeah.
And we've also got people in the tent to help with suggestions. And like you can bring your situation, oh, I've got a shady yard, and we can help you find plants that will be suitable.
That's important to know where you're planting them, obviously.
Always match them up.
Let's go quickly to Jill in Racine. She's got a question. Hi, Jill.
Your hummingbird workshop, I'm very interested. And I hope you give your website so I can look up the tent sale and everything else you've mentioned.
Okay. Thanks, Jill. We have, this is, the Gardening for Hummingbirds is actually a, is going to be a morning program. It's it'll run from 9 a.m. until about 11:15 or 11:30. And it will be presented by Kathy and Michael Rock, who are experts on hummingbirds here in Madison. And so if you go to our website, arboretum.wisc.edu, there will be a link there for winter enrichment lectures, and you can just select that one if that's the one you're interested in. It will be offered February 20th.
Okay. Well, thanks for the question, Jill. And again, we do have a link to buying plants on our program note, wpr.org/Larry. Well, Susan Carpenter and Jude Sullivan are our guests today on Garden Talk. Join in. We would like to hear your questions, and we can talk about native plants, too. The number 800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau. I'm filling in for Larry Mueller today. Join us on Monday when we're going to talk about using your Instant Pot to eat better. And then we'll take a look back at 2019 with the Weather Guys. That's starting at 11 o'clock on the Ideas Network right here. So we've been talking about getting fit for gardening. And let's go right back to the phones. We've got Jim from Stevens Point who's been waiting. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, how are you doing?
I'm good.
You're so fit?
So about 25 years ago, I had two major back surgeries, which kind of put a crimp in my gardening. And I took up swimming. And through my physical therapist, I had a stretching regimen that I kind of have been pretty consistently following for all those years, which has allowed me to garden. And then in the last year, I took up Tai Chi, which has surprisingly really helped my balance and some strengthening. So that's kind of what I've been doing. So, yeah, I feel pretty fit this year.
What do you think about that, Jude?
I love it.
Yeah.
Way to go. So one of the questions that I'll always kind of rhetorically but not so rhetorically ask people is what's possible? And sometimes we, again, as I said before, when life throws something at us, we think, well, that's it, I'm done. Yeah. But there's something always possible, and I think this is a classic example. I really applaud you for, you know, finding something different, because that can be a really uncomfortable spot to be in emotionally and certainly physically, and so you found a way. So well done.
Yeah.
And the other neat thing about it is that Sounds like you've been really consistent with your swimming and your stretching. However, trying something new with the Tai Chi, that just adds another element. And so it's a good example also of finding what works for me and what I can take forward. So that's just really a great contribution. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you.
Get as many arrows in your quiver as you can.
That's right.
So you can pull
on
those.
Know.
That's right.
You never know. And speaking of stretching, is that important to do before you go out and guard?
We don't do stretching. You know, we don't start our gardening session with stretching.
Uh-huh.
I mean, people are usually very good at self-regulating their level of activity. I've found, at least with my volunteers, you know, we're working outdoors. It's summer. It can be hot. It can be, we can be in a sunny spot. You know, so there's all kinds of factors coming into it. You know, I do point out, if I see someone doing something that I think is possibly going to cause an injury, or, you know, would caution them about it, I would say something. But usually, I mean, a lot of people I work with are very experienced gardeners.
Oh, sure.
Or if they're new to gardening, they're, you know, they're very good at you know, kind of adjusting their own, you know, their own activity. But stretching is important. We usually do it at, we warm up first, get warmed up before
so
the
warm
exercise.
So warm up exercises would be?
Get warmed up first, and then you have, like, say in class, you do your series of exercises and stretch at the end.
At the end, because that's kind of changed around in the last decade or so, hasn't it? You used to have to stretch first, and then now you do it after?
Yeah, a lot of that was based on tradition. So they'd use what they referred to as static stretching, these positional holding type stretches.
Right.
And so, you know, there's really not a wealth of research that, you know, validates that from an injury prevention perspective.
Okay.
Not that it doesn't feel good or anything like that.
Right.
And so, again, if you feel like that's the way to go for you, you know, maybe that would be something to consider. But some sort of what we would call gentle dynamic movements, you know, even walking at a brisk pace and then starting into what would be movements that are specific to the demands that you're going to do either in your exercise program or in your gardening session, to try to mimic those at a low level and just slowly bring yourself into where you're going to be, you know, working at whatever intensity you're going to be
sure.
at.
Yeah, well, that makes total sense. Let's go to Barb. She is in Wausau, and she has a question about those darn jumping worms. Hi, Barb.
Hi, I'm sorry. I just tuned in a few minutes ago, so I'm not sure that I'm on target to what you're talking about. But you were talking about the plant sale, and I'm wondering how that is going to, the jumping worms are going to affect that.
Well, that's a great question, Barb. And we did have to address that several years ago when the Arboretum was actually documented as the first place in Wisconsin that had where jumping worms were documented. So what we did at that time is we used to accept donations of plants from people's gardens. We do not do that anymore. The main thing about jumping worms is you do not want to spread them. So we don't have donated plants. The plants are purchased in, and they're produced in nurseries which are certified to be jumping worm free. We keep the plants up off of the ground, tables, or else we have barriers, pallets, landscape fabric that would prevent any worms moving up into the plants. In May, jumping worms are not they're not terribly active because they have an annual life cycle, so they're just barely hatching out at the time of our plant sale, but we don't take any chances with that. The plants are all held up off the ground so that the worms couldn't come into contact with them. That's a really good concern. And many other sales are taking these same kinds of precautions. So it does change what you were doing. It changes what you were doing, but it is for the benefit of not spreading the worms around any more than they get around on their own.
Thank you very much, Barb. Like you said, you've had the distinction of having the first jumping worms noticed in our state, but have you found any way to control them?
Well, they're not. That's very difficult because they are in sites where they are present and where they do well, they tend to, you know, reproduce, and they tend to be there. The person who called in earlier with a sand prairie or sand situation, that is an area where you don't get jumping worms. Sandy soils are not their preferred environment. Very exposed areas are usually not high in jumping worms. So it's more the semi-shaded, partially shaded, moister areas. And the soil could dry. The worms would go down below the surface a little bit, but they are a surface-dwelling worm, so they don't like areas that are really dry or well, terrifically well-drained, mm-hmm. Like a sandy area.
And what kind of damage have they done over there?
Well, they tend to... We are still learning a lot about what their effects are, and this presentation that our arboretum ecologist will do on March 5th in our lecture series about the jumping worms will be a great place to learn about and bring those questions. We do have some material on our website as well. What I've noticed in the garden, and I've had them in the native plant garden for about 10 years now, is that sometimes they alter the soil because they're surface dwellers. So the soil becomes very grainy, kind of like coffee grounds, and it stays that way for quite a while. So that surface layer of soil where plants would be rooting or starting, establishing, is much looser, and it loses moisture much more quickly than it would you know, unless it's constantly being, it's raining all the time like it has been last year.
You never know.
But so there's that. It affects the other earthworms, because when the jumping worms are present, when they move into an area, we find that the deeper dwelling earthworms are displaced or no longer there. So it can affect, you know, just the soil community. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, we don't know all the results of that, because it could affect microorganisms and the chemistry of the soils. But so a lot of that research is ongoing, and we're learning more and more. Control is a very tricky business with them, because, you know, their volume, you know, they can, if they're in an area, there are a lot of them. Some people bag them up and collect them and move them aside into a place where they're never coming back from, but they do produce a cocoon. We call it a cocoon, a little resting stage, and that has the small worms in it. So mm-hmm. they can continue on in a site over time.
Great. And just to repeat, where they can find out about those classes.
The winter enrichment lectures, those will be listed on our website, mm-hmm. and that is arboretum.wisc.edu, and right on the front page you'll see a link for the lectures, and each lecture is described, and so you could tell which ones you'd be interested in. You can sign up for them individually, or you could maybe pick five of them, or whatever you're interested in, mm-hmm. or the whole series.
Yeah, and there's a lot of other things on your website besides
exactly
that too,
all of our walks, mm-hmm. and tours and night walks and full moon night walks and all the different things that are families programs,
yeah.
work parties. We have our Saturday work parties every Saturday morning all year long. So you can still get out there. And that's actually kind of another kind of gardening in a way.
Yeah.
Ecological restoration. You're
there you go.
Cutting brush, you're hauling brush, you're twisting, you're moving. It's
and they're
great.
Letting you do it for free. It's
well,
amazing.
It has great physical and ecological benefits.
Absolutely, yep. absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the stuff that we do, there's snow shoveling or gardening, is that we are doing the shovel, you know, we're doing the rake, we're whatever. What are some of the best ways to avoid injury doing those particular things? So, Jude, go ahead.
So, obviously, preparation, like taking a class like Susan's, mm-hmm. but the other thing is waiting before you become overwhelmed with a task. So like with these lighter accumulations of snow, whatever your preferred method of shoveling is, so like if you're left hand forward, right hand back, to switch it.
Well, I tried that, but
it's
don't do very well.
It's very uncomfortable, but it's a good way to distribute the work across your body.
Okay.
And so this idea of overly repetitive motions can, you know, set you up potentially to be vulnerable to mm-hmm. an injury. It's not a guarantee, but, you know, you could be vulnerable. So that's a very effective way. It's a very practical way of trying it. But it's kind of like if you eat with a fork with your right hand, exactly. And I say, well, try it with your left hand. How many peas are going
to
stay? Yeah. You know, whatever.
Poke yourself in the eye.
Yeah, you'll be eating dinner for 3 hours. I think that for most people, that's a very effective way to do it. Otherwise, you just have to break it up during the course of a day or a weekend or whatever and distribute that workout over the course of time.
Is that the advice you give people in your classes, Susan?
Yeah, I would say just be sensible about it and don't push yourself into the injury zone. You know, we have the comfortable zone, we have the challenging zone, and then we have the injury zone. So don't go that far. Stay in the challenging zone, stay in the comfortable zone as far as you can to be safe.
And life will not end if you don't finish, right? And your hour time or what have you, it's going to be okay. All right. Well, we've been talking about avoiding injury and getting in shape for gardening with Susan Carpenter of the UW Arboretum and Jude Sullivan of the UW Health Fitness Center. I'm Jill Nadeau. I'm in for Larry Mueller today. Remember, you can hear us Friday at 11, Saturday morning at 6, or you can always go online anytime to hear the programs again and check out our blog while you're there. Stay with us. There's always more to come. I'm Jill Nadeau, and you're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network, and we're talking about getting fit for gardening with Susan Carpenter. She's a senior outreach specialist in the Wisconsin Native Plant Garden at the UW-Madison Arboretum, and Jude Sullivan, he is a senior exercise physiologist at the UW Health Fitness Center. Do you have an injury that's maybe limiting your time in the garden? Do you want to know how to feel better being out in the garden? Well, do you have any gardening questions, especially native gardening questions? We can help you. Give us a call, 800-642-1234. And you can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org. So, Jude, if there was one thing that someone could do that's listening right now to get ready to get out and do some gardening this spring, what would you suggest?
Wow, that's a pretty open-ended question. I would say if you're doing nothing, just do something.
Start.
Yeah, just start. Mm-hmm. And again, trust your instincts. I think many times, you know, and I have to own this as I'm in the field, you know, I think we've kind of set up this system where if an expert hasn't validated what I'm thinking, then it must not be the right thing to do. And we really hope to reverse that, you know, mindset, and you know, really have people believe what it is that they're thinking about themselves, and to be empowered and to really trust what they're doing and to go for it.
Mm-hmm. So, oh, great! Yeah, that's good incentive. Because really, Susan, I mean, it is all about taking that first step, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it can be very simple, just movement. And if someone feels, you know, if you're moving and maybe you start moving gently. Maybe that's where you start. If you have an issue with, say, a shoulder or something, you don't move into a point where you're feeling pain. Mm-hmm. You just move up to that point and keep moving. Just putting more activity into your day is just a really great first step if you're feeling kind of like the winter blahs, as sometimes we end up with at this time of year.
Sure.
Lots of people have resolutions and a lot of motivations at the beginning of the year, but you know, don't make it something that you know you're not going to want to do. Make it something that you think you will do, and then keep at it for a few weeks, mm-hmm. because once you've been moving and trying new things and maybe an activity that you haven't done for a while, or a new activity like someone earlier mentioning
Tai Chi.
Mm-hmm. Try something new and stick with it for a little while and see how it benefits. You're not going to notice the benefit like tomorrow necessarily. You might have some slightly sore muscles.
Yeah, but that's feel the opposite.
That next day sore muscles, mm-hmm. as long as it isn't pain,
right.
is a good thing. Mm-hmm. So you've stressed your muscles a little. Now you're feeling it. Wait a day. Try it again. And mm-hmm. actually, after a while, you won't be, you know, unless you're really, you know, doing something off, you won't be in pain. Mm-hmm. You'll just be feeling like, hey, I guess I lifted a little heavier weight than I was lifting.
So managing expectations important at the beginning, especially. You're not going to be Superman in a month.
Right. So the other thing I would say is there's a difference between what you're doing and then the subjectivity of what it is that you're doing. And so one thing that's never going to change, no matter how fit you become, is the feeling of what hard feels like.
Mm, right.
And so many times, you know, people will look at us and they'll say, well, it's easy for you. It's like, no, it's not. Hard is hard.
Right.
You know, I think Susan's done a good job of kind of going through this. If you start something and then you just kind of take a peek back at what you were doing before and you realize, oh my gosh, I'm at a way different place.
Sure.
But I still have to be willing to be a little uncomfortable because, you know, at the end of a long gardening day, I can't say I'm comfortable. You know, I got a lot of work done. I moved rocks and I'm tired, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. But if again, you can qualify that experience and be gentle with yourself and just know that you are making progress.
Yeah. Okay, great. Well, let's go back to the phones. We've got Ellen in Cedarburg and she has a question for you, Susan. Go ahead, Ellen.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I am wondering if the Arboretum sale will have roses. I hit January 1st, and I immediately started checking my online catalog.
Okay. Well, Ellen, the Arboretum, the Friends of the Arboretum plant sale, both the tent sale in May, on May 9th, and the advance order, are both only really dealing with native plants. I know that in the advance order, we don't have any roses, any native roses listed on the sheet. But I also know that our coordinator is willing to talk with people about any special orders that they may have in mind. So it would not be hybrid roses or, you know, your classic English roses or anything like that. It would be native roses that she would be able to possibly make available. So that would be, you can, if you go to the Arboretum website, arboretum.wisc.edu, you would see the plant sale link. And in the plant sale materials, you would find the contact information for that. If you were interested in native roses, those are usually prairie plants. So they would need full sun. They would be, they would spread a bit in the garden by rhizome, in my experience. They're not too tall. And they have the simple flowers, the simple rose flowers with the five petals really open. So they're not a hybrid rose at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't you tell us, and thank you for that question, Ellen. Mm-hmm. Let's take a look at some of the things you are selling. How are they organized? What can you learn about them by going to the website?
Okay, so our advance order sale includes native trees and shrubs and native plant garden mixes and single species of, well, you can get a full flat or half flat of a single species if you have something that you particularly would like to have a lot of. We also have several ground covers, one specifically for very, very shady areas and some that can go in semi-shade or even in full sun. So the materials on the website, we have a wonderful brochure this year. It has illustrations of everything.
Color, oh, nice.
Little color illustrations of everything. So you can get an idea of what some of the features of the plants are. And the descriptions include the habitat. And I can't emphasize more how important it is to have the plants that you select match up with the place that you want to plant them. So we can't grow full sun plants in the shade, sadly, and we really don't usually grow shade loving plants in full sun. It just doesn't really work that way. But you do have a lot of information on this sheet to help you match the plant with the site that you have in mind. And sometimes it's important to remember that, like, say, if you have the north side of your house, it's going to be cooler and moister right on the north side of your house than it is on the south side. So it might not have to be very shady there. It might be that environment might be suitable for a plant that would otherwise need to be in the shade if it were out, you know, in the open, not near not near your house. So test areas around there to see, oh, does this have enough moisture? Is this a little bit, is this a little too dry or is this a little too sunny? We do have some native plant garden mixes, which are grouped together. For example, our rain garden mix. So all those plants would be suitable for rain garden growing together. Savanna garden. That can be a very important type of garden for a homeowner because usually we have shade and sun kind of scattered in our yard, and that can be a good spot to have a savanna garden because a savanna has those both sun and shade features within it. We have a forest garden for shade, so that would cover the kind of deep shade. And then what happens if you have lost a big tree or you had to cut down an ash tree because of emerald ash borer or lost a large specimen, some other reason? Then for that, we have a birds, bees, and butterflies mix. And so for pollinators, we really want to have a little more sun, and those will then provide a lot of floral resource for those, for the bees and butterflies, specifically for pollinators. And then birds, of course, are using all manner of insects and and caterpillars and everything that they can find, especially while they're nesting,
mm-hmm.
to feed their young.
So how big are the plants? I mean, I know the trees are...
Yeah, our trees are of good size. Uh-huh. They are, as we describe them, they are large enough to be strong and well established, but they're small enough to handle and to not throw your back out when you and to fit into your car to carry
your car
home.
There's the key.
But our small plants are generally in the 2-inch pots or in plugs of that similar size, mm-hmm. so they would be good sized, well established plants ready to put in the ground. And when you plant a small plant like that, maybe it's 6 inches tall or 4 to 6 inches tall at planting, by the end of the season, you're kind of asking yourself, was that this season or last season that I planted those plants?
Okay.
They really take and they take off.
Mm-hmm.
So,
are there instructions with that so that you know how deep to plant them or how far apart?
Right. We usually for the depth, you would simply plant the plant at the level that it's growing in its pot. Make sure you're not burying it or having excess soil over the crown of the plant, because that's where the growing point may be, especially for like the clumps of grasses and so forth. As far as a distance apart, if you're trying to do a full bed, like say you have one of the plant mixes and you're trying to get a bed that's really kind of full, we usually plant on 1 foot. We plant the plants 1 foot apart in each direction.
Mm-hmm.
And then they fill in really well with a little bit of growth.
Mm-hmm.
And then you don't have space in as much space in between where weeds could get started.
Yeah. And what about the prep itself?
Preparation of the soil.
The soil, yeah.
Usually, usually we do very little preparation of soil, very little amendment of soil, and we have a lot of variation in our soils. Even in 4 acres of the native plant garden, we have heavy, heavy clay. We have more sandy loam. We have some lighter soils. So the important thing is, again, to match the plant with the type of soil. I have prickly pear cactus, which is a native plant of Wisconsin.
It is. Yeah.
And it's growing in our sand prairie. So we did bring in extra sand in that area because we didn't have any area automatically that had sand. But I have also prickly pear cactus growing in a more medium soil and it does fine.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to often do a little bit of trial and error, but you don't want to invest in a lot of plants and just assume that you can do it somewhere where they really aren't suited. So don't get too wild with your experiments, but you can experiment a little bit because you never know. I wouldn't maybe have predicted that a cactus could do so well in the medium soil, but it's well-drained soil,
sure.
And so it does work.
Yeah, they can adapt, in a little bit.
Some of the plants have a pretty wide amplitude of like soil moisture or light requirements, and those are the ones that are easy to experiment with.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them are more specific. So, really shade-loving plant, don't try to grow it in the sunshine necessarily.
Yeah. Now, when you were talking about your savanna, you said that there were shade and light. Were there specific plants that go in the shade in a savanna and specific ones that go in the light, or do they like They can live with both.
Well, those are some of the plants that have a wider amplitude. And what we find is our savanna was, our trees were really small. Our savanna gardens, of course, our trees were small when we started because they were just, it was a new garden.
Sure.
And then as it's gotten shadier and shadier, which I'm sure most homeowners can relate to, the yard gets shadier and shadier. So some of the plants that loved bright, you know, more light are no longer as obvious, and they may still be there. So if we lose a tree or if we would thin out those trees, we may see them rebound. This happens in our restoration work as well. But they won't be as prevalent, you know, in the shadier areas. And then, of course, in the sunnier areas, they'll still be there.
That totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Nature knows what she's doing, right? And we've got an email from Stephanie. And Jude, this is a good question for you, I think. She's having hip replacement surgery in February. How soon should she be able to get all the way down and all the way back up? I know it's hard to judge that. And how soon can she shovel? What exercises will help her get strong again?
How poignant of a question is. I just had hip replacement myself in September.
Wow, that's impressive because you're not limping.
So there is hope.
There's hope,
So I would say much of it, it's as physically demanding as it is, it's more of a mindset thing. And so you have time to prepare yourself now to get ready, and I can't overstate the importance of that because it just gets you in the habit of going through something that's not going to be comfortable, and going through the rehabilitation process will also be uncomfortable, but it's necessary. And so to say that you're going to be getting back to full activities as you knew them before by X amount of time would probably not be a fair thing for me to say. But I would say, you know, under the guidance of your surgeon and through your physical therapist to really push them to let them know how much you really want this.
To do. Okay.
And they'll provide you some latitude for that. And they'll give you some guidance. They might accelerate based on how you're performing, you know, what some of that rehab might look like. So I totally applaud you for going through this and encourage you to continue to be your own advocate. And, you know, you're not just going through this process hoping to come out alive on the other side, but you really need to be proactive and really to work in concert with, like I said, your surgeon and your therapist so that you can co-create. It's kind of like what we do with our classes. You're co-creating this experience for the best possible outcome.
I know our physical therapists who are here once a month have spoken so much about doing the exercises and getting strong before the surgery and what a difference that it makes.
Yes, absolutely.
So definitely work with the PTs and the doctors so they know what you want.
Yep.
Excellent question, Stephanie. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Yeah, definitely. And let's talk about your class one more time.
Right.
Your workshop, I should say. So we don't get these terms. So you do classes, and you also are doing this special workshop. So tell us once again about it.
So the special workshop is called Fitness for Gardening, and it will be offered at the UW Health Research Park Clinic, which is on Science Drive here in Madison, the west side. It will be Saturday, January 25th, and it's at 8 to 10 a.m.
Okay.
So bright and early.
Uh-huh.
The cost is $25. The registration is live now, and you have that link up on your on your website.
Yeah.
So we want people to come prepared to move. We'll be talking a little bit and moving a lot.
Okay.
And we'll also send people away with the experience of some of the exercises we're suggesting and a small program that they can carry out during the weeks afterwards and just hopefully inspire people to take that next step and be a little more prepared for the gardening season.
Right.
Because gardening is a lot more fun when you're feeling good than if you're worried about hurting yourself.
And how disappointing is it when you injure yourself and you had all these plans for your garden and you can't do it because you've hurt yourself. So definitely.
Yep.
And Jude, let's talk about the fitness center one more time too and why it's different and what people can find there.
Sure. So again, we're affiliated with University of Wisconsin Hospital and Clinics. We're a satellite clinic in the Research Park, which is in Madison on Science Drive. the fitness center itself is open to the public, so there's no requirements in terms of affiliations of any kind. Anybody can walk off the street and technically become a member. We like to establish relationships with the people who come with us to start a program. And so there's various ways of accessing that. And so we can kind of outline that process. But we want to make sure that we know where somebody's at from a health perspective, and we'll evaluate that. For people who become members, we actually want the physician on board with this decision. And so we'll ask them to be involved as well, just to kind of give them the green light to say, this is a good idea, go for it. Mm-hmm. And then with the classes, we go through a health history with each and every person who comes in as a new participant. And so, again, we want to make sure that we're educating our instructors so that they know who's coming into their class. So the nice thing, like Susan said, she has 17 people in her class who have been longtime members. But the thing is that she's not going to have anybody just randomly dropping into the class. So she can provide a progressive overload, a progressive resistance program for these people that anticipate that there's going to be progress.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what we're hoping for.
Yeah. That's
and
what
so
you want.
You're not just going to walk in and stay at the same thing. It's like, okay, here's your list of exercises, you know, go for it for the next 20 weeks. No, this is going to be a living program. It's going to be adapted as time goes on because mm-hmm. the person's adapting. And hopefully it's fun mm-hmm. and they have all these positive changes, and then they're literally asking for more and wanting for more, and then it becomes very exciting, you know, for the participant because mm-hmm. then we can help them co-create. We're not dictating to them, but we're simply responding to the request mm-hmm. for more.
And you had mentioned about talking with a physician. That's mm-hmm. important for anybody wanting to start an exercise program. Is that right?
I would say the general blanket response might be yes, mm-hmm. but I would say especially if you've been away from being active for an extended period of time, mm-hmm. you know, there are things that can kind of fly in under the radar that you're not aware of until you've spoken to somebody.
Sure.
And, you know, we're definitely obviously advocates for, you know, medical support and to have that person on board with you and just having the conversation. You know, and just knowing that somebody's there in your corner for you
right.
To help you as you get started, mm-hmm. we really are mm-hmm. invested in that.
Yeah, great. And Susan, you had mentioned earlier that you have volunteers that work for you over at the Arboretum. How does someone become a volunteer?
Oh, that's a great question. Mm-hmm. At the Arboretum, we really have a lot of volunteer involvement in a lot of our programs. So a lot of our outdoor programs have volunteer involvement, restoration work parties I mentioned on Saturday morning. Anybody can come and do ecological restoration with the group. But also the gardening, both the native plant garden, the horticultural, Longenecker horticultural gardens. There are groups that work with them. We have indoor options for volunteering as well. Bookstore workers and receptionists. So you would contact our volunteer program coordinator, Judy Kingsbury, and that's right on our website, arboretum.wisc.edu.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much. Our guests today on Garden Talk have been Susan Carpenter, the Senior Outreach Specialist in the Wisconsin Native Plant Garden at the UW-Madison Arboretum, and Jude Sullivan, a Senior Exercise Physiologist at the UW Health Fitness Center. I hope you can join us on Monday. We'll be talking to a woman who lost 125 pounds with the help of her Instant Pot. And we'll also check in with the weather guys. I'm Jill Najo. Thanks so much for listening to the Ideas Network, and enjoy your weekend.